My name is Lily Kramer. I'm 14 years old. Today is January 11th, and I'm speaking with Sam Payne, who is my grandmother's friend. We are recording in...
Where 33 Rainflower, Village Grand, West Windsor, New Jersey.
Yes, we are in New Jersey.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Payne, you were a helicopter pilot and an airline pilot.
That's correct, yes. Yeah.
So, do you have any stories that...
Yeah, I have stories to tell. I got started in aviation through ROTC at Lafayette College, where I went to school. And I learned to fly at Lafayette and then went into the Army, and they taught me to fly helicopters. That was fun because I enjoyed flying. And they sent me to Korea, and I spent 16 months in Korea. That's 16 and not 13. 13 is normal, but they put the Berlin Wall up while I was in Korea, and they extended the my term over there to 16 months. When I came back to the States, I was a flight instructor down at Fort Rucker, Alabama, and everybody I taught went straight to Vietnam. I missed Vietnam by 2 days.
Wow.
When I was in Korea, the Army decided that the 1st Cavalry Division, which I was in, had to go to Korea. And if you had 180 days or more to go in Korea, they would send you to Vietnam. I had 178 days to go, so I missed it by 2 days. Missed going to Vietnam, which probably saved my life. I was an infantry officer, so when my time of flying helicopters, which was 3 years, was up, then I would have gone to Vietnam, but not as a helicopter pilot, but as an infantry officer. Yeah. So I probably would have gotten shot over there.
Yeah.
Then again, if you was a helicopter pilot, I probably would have gotten shot too, so I was lucky. After I got out of the service, I started flying for New Jersey Helicopter Airways down in Trenton, New Jersey. And we did all kinds of flying. I flew the governor. I flew all sorts of high state officials. Forest firefighting, I did that. Flew for the state police, the marine police. I even got to guard the president of the United States one time. They had the Democratic convention in Atlantic City, and they needed a helicopter pilot to fly over the president every time he moved. This is before the Army did it. And I was the guy they chose. So I was in a helicopter. I had a secret serviceman on one side with a machine gun, a state trooper on the other side with a machine gun, and my job was to put them in position if anybody tried to take out the president. But nothing happened, so that was good. After I did that, They got a job in Argentina for the United Nations. And so I went to Argentina, and I spent almost a year in Argentina working with the United Nations and the government of Argentina looking for copper mines in the Andes Mountains down there. And the Andes are high mountains. In fact, Mount Aconcagua was right in the middle of where I was teaching, and that was, I think, over 23,000 feet high. So, and I had to look for a lost mountain climber on that mountain one time, and that was not fun. But I flew down there. One interesting thing I did while I was in Argentina, I was flying down a valley. I was about 8,000 feet, which was about 1,000 feet above the ground. And I looked off to my left front, and there was a condor up there, an Andes condor. I said, I'm gonna have a little fun, I'm gonna follow him. So I flew up behind him, and he was right next to the wall of the canyon. So I flew up like that, and I got behind him, maybe from here to that house over there, maybe 150 yards or so. I didn't get any close, I didn't wanna scare him. But he knew I was there because I saw him look at me several times. His wings were probably 8 or 10 feet across. He was big. I followed him for about 3 or 4 minutes. And in that time, he never moved his wings once. He never lost any altitude. We never lost any altitude. And for my wife. At any rate, and I stayed close to the wall like he was, and I was using the same winds that he was using, so I had to use much less power just to stay behind it. But it was fun. I mean, I flew formation with a condor, more or less. Anyway, yeah, that was an interesting story. Then I came back to the United States, and a friend of mine was working for TWA, Trans World Airlines, and I had lunch with him one day, and he said, "Man, you really ought to get a job with the airline. It's really good." So I said, "All right, well." So I flew until the end of the summer in the helicopters, and then I went to flight school for airplanes out in Oklahoma, American Flyers. And I got my licenses for fixed-wing airplane. And then I had to try to get a job with the airline. Well, at the time, I was 31 years old. And the airlines would only take you, most of them cut you off at 29. You couldn't get a job unless you were over, you know, under that. But anyway, a couple of airlines would take you till 32 years old. So I had a year I had to work with. And so I started flying as much as I could. I became a flight instructor and was teaching people to fly. And then I was very lucky. I got a chance to fly a King Air, which is a nice turbine engine, two-engine airplane that had jet engines. And that pretty much made the difference, because they sent me to King Air School out in Kansas, and Kansas City is on the way, and that's where headquarters for TWA was. So I stopped in there, and I got to talk to the chief pilot, which you can't do anymore. And he asked me how much time I had when I soloed. I said 7 hours. And he said, "That's good," and because that's nobody solos in 7 hours anymore. But anyway, I talked to him. I gave him my logbooks. And I guess it was about 2 months later, I got a letter saying they were interested in me coming for an interview. So I went out there, and eventually I got on with TWA. And that was fun. I really enjoyed that. But, I started on Friday the 13th, November, September. And I thought I had it made. Well, 2 years later, I get furloughed. That means laid off. So then I had to get a job, and I did a lot of little flying jobs and stuff. And I was laid off for 2 years. They called me back, and I figured, now I got it made again, right? Well, and a year later, they laid me off again. So now I had to get another job. That was an interesting job. I got a job as a draftsman at an engineering company, and they used me for flying and through and all other sort of stuff. That was fun. And I was off for like 2 or 3 years, and then TWA called me back again to go to work for them. So, now I finally got it made. So I went back to work for TWA, worked I think 2 or 3 more years, and they laid me off a third time. So now, you know, I got a wife, I got 3 kids, I got a big dog, a big house. How am I going to support him? Well, I had a friend who worked over in Europe, in Switzerland, and he called me up and said he knows about a job in Switzerland. So I didn't have any other choices, so I said, "I'll take the job." And initially, I was supposed to be able to take the family and everybody over there, and it was going to be wonderful, right? Well, it didn't work that way, because Switzerland only lets you stay in the country for 3 months, and then you got to leave. And that's just the way they work. I don't know how it works now, but that's how it worked then. So I couldn't have had my family over there anyway. And anyway, they put me to work on a 727 as an engineer, for a guy who was a Kuwaiti, you know, and so I never heard of Kuwait before, so I had to look them up on the computer and see what Kuwait was all about. But that was an interesting job. I did that for almost a little over 2 years and flew all over the place. And that was interesting, to say the least. But then he ran out of money, and so I was out of a job again. And that was about the time that the union at TWA called me up and said that an airline called Piedmont Airlines was hiring if I was interested. So they gave me the phone number. So I applied to Piedmont and got a job with Piedmont Airlines. And Piedmont was a good airline. That was, you know, I made captain in 3 years with them, which I would never have done with TWA. And then they got bought by US Air. And meanwhile, TWA had been bought by American, right? So all my buddies at TWA are now working for American. Then US Air decides to buy American. So I end up working with the same guys I worked with in the very, very beginning. But that's basically it. Then I retired from US Air. I was 60 years old, and I haven't flown since.
Wow.
And I'm 83 right now, so that's a long time. And but I did a lot of interesting stuff while I was flying, so. But that's my whole life story right there.
Yeah, so going back to your time overseas, what was it like in Korea for you?
In Korea, well, we were right up on the DMZ, right on the border between North and South Korea. Mm-hmm. And Panmunjom, which is where they meet sometimes, was right within our area. So we were, as I say, we were with the 1st Cavalry Division, and our job was, if the North Koreans came across, to hold them for 1 day. And then the other division, the Republic of Korea Army, the other U.S. people will all back us up. But we, you know, I didn't like Korea very much, to be honest with you, but it was interesting, you know. It was kind of boring because if you weren't flying, you weren't doing anything, you know.
Yeah.
But we flew quite a bit. It was good. I did have one accident over there. That wasn't so much fun. I got in a downdrift, and I was in a big helicopter, and the blades hit a rock. So luckily the blades were coming like this, the rock was here, and instead of hitting the rock like that, which would have taken the blades off, they all hit the rock like that. So we almost lost our blades, but we didn't. So we were able to safely land, and that was interesting. But that was a learning experience for me, learning how to fly in the mountains with the winds. That held up good when I was down in Argentina because they had a lot of high winds down there. Now, I don't know if you want me to tell you particular stories or anything, but that's pretty much everything. That's my life.
Yeah. I mean, if you have any, like, very interesting stories, ones you particularly like about your experience.
Well, I like the one about behind a condor. That's one of my favorite stories. Let me think about it for a second. We did agricultural flying, you know, spraying fields and stuff like that. And we always had to worry about the wires. And I did one field one time, and the wires were going across the field, so I set the whole field up to go parallel to the wires. And at the end of the, you get done, you want to fly one time around the field, right? Mm-hmm. So I had done the field, it was good, and then I started my thing around the wires. I came up, went over the wires, came down here, and there's a little island of trees down here. So I real quick went around them, and there were the wires right there in front of me, and I couldn't go over mine. I had to try to go under them, and I made it, just barely, but I made it. So, and I had a friend, he and I flew out to Michigan, to Lansing, Michigan. anyway, in Michigan, Battle Creek. We were in Battle Creek. And we were going to do a job for the U.S. government. And they wanted to spray, I think it was 25 miles of a highway, a four-lane highway. And they wanted us to go down one side, come back in the middle of the island, go down the other side, and come back this way at 25 miles. And I told the guy right away, I said, that's not a good idea. I said, we need to know where the wires are on this, so let's do 5 miles at a clip. You know, go 5 miles, come back and do it. He said, no, we can't do that. We're going to have somebody follow you in a car to make sure you don't miss anything. So you got to go that full 25 miles. I said, I don't like this idea at all. Anyway, I went out and flew my first bunch of flying, I mean, 10 miles or whatever it was. And then my buddy went out and he flew the next, and he hit wires, big high tension wires for a television station, and he crashed. And I thought he was dead, but he wasn't. But he did break his back, and he had his leg badly damaged. But and I got really mad, but you know, the government, you can't fight the government. So yeah. My boss came in from New Jersey, and he wouldn't even let me talk to the guy. So anyway, then we had to go get another helicopter, and that was hard to do. But anyway, we finally got it done, and we did finish the job. But I was really mad at the government, I was to say. What else? Trying to think of... Well, I got hijacked one time.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was very lucky. We were out crossing the Atlantic, going to Geneva, Switzerland. And about 4 or 5 in the morning, everybody's sound asleep on the airplane. One of the flight attendants comes up, and she says she has a note for the captain. She said, this guy came by, had a mask on and a mustache and a cape, and he dropped this in my lap and said, go take this to the captain. She says, what? And he pulls open the cape, and it looked like there were hand grenades in there. He said, oh, great, you know. So then she comes up to the cockpit, and she's supposed to stay up there. And she has a single, a piece of paper, well, actually, it's a manifesto or whatever it was, 17 single-space typewritten pages of stuff that we had to do. And, oh, man, Mark, the guy apparently went into the bathroom, took all this stuff off, stuffed it down in the toilet, went back and sat down in his seat, and nobody saw it. So we had 78 people on the airplane. And give me a second here. I'll read to you the first line of what this guy said. They said, this is the first line. The fate of this airplane and the passengers depend on the cooperation of the U.S. government and the crew of this airplane, together with the task force of our United Revolutionary Soldiers. The soldiers have orders not to interfere with the operation of the airplane except to blow the plane up and with the passengers if you don't follow our instructions. And it goes on and on and on. This is a whole darn letter. So, but anyway, we started reading a letter. We had the flight attendants all learned about it, and so they were looking at all the passengers, and it's a long story, but after we went to Geneva, we landed, we set up radios through the window of the cockpit to talk to the ground, and we sat there until like 4 p.m. And finally, you know, the captain says, you know, the heck with it, let's just get off the airplane. And if they blow it up, they blow it up, you know. Yeah. And so we got off the airplane and they put us on a bus and we went to the police station. And it was maddening because we knew that the guy who did this was in the bus with us, you know. Anyway, to make a long story short, we came out the next day. And TWA said we can do whatever we want. If we want to go home, we can, if we don't want to work, we don't, I mean, whatever we had to, you know, whatever we wanted to do, it was all right. But we were supposed to go to Nice the next day and come back to Geneva and come home the third day. So we all decided we'd just keep on working, except for the poor girl who gave us the note. She was the primary subject, so, of the investigation. And the poor girl was going to get married in 2 weeks. I really felt sorry for her. Anyway, we came back to the airplane, and I talked to a mechanic, and he said, boy, he was scared. He said he found the stuff in the toilet, pulled it out, and as he did, the vest opened up, and there was a hand grenade in there. And he said, oh, man, he thought he would. But they were kids' hand grenades. They were things you buy in a toy store.
Wow.
And so this guy just, he wanted to, one of the generals from the war for Germany let out of jail. He had a life sentence and he wanted him let out of jail. And the guy, they caught the guy. Finally, his typewriter, they matched it up. And he came from New York, but he had been in the German army. But it made life very interesting for us, to say the least. So,
yeah.
But we all got fingerprinted and elbow printed, everything you can think of, to see if any of us had anything to do. Of course, we didn't. But and that was an interesting time. And that's, you know, that's about it. I don't know if you have enough information for your.
Going back to like. The very beginning, you said that you enjoyed flying and you got into it through ROTC, but like, what made you choose flying and like originally get into it?
Well, just luck. I was a very bad Spanish student. I failed Spanish in high school, and I went to college and I got a C in it. No, a D in it. Then I transferred schools. I went to Washington Jefferson first, then I went to Lafayette. And they wouldn't accept that D. So I had to take Spanish again. It's the third year now, right? And I had a good professor. Dean Obrecht was his name. He was a very nice guy. So I passed. But then I had to take second year. Well, I had second year. It was terrible. I had a really lousy instructor, and I failed it. So then I had to take it again the next year, and by this time I still couldn't do it. It was terrible. Finally, that's the fourth. The fifth year, if I wanted to graduate from college, I had to pass Spanish, right? And it was the last mark I got in school, right? And it was like 2 days after I'd taken all the other exams, I had to take the Spanish exam. And I had the same guy that I had the first year, Dean Obrecht. And he said, all you seniors, write down senior on the top of your exam. So I wrote in great big letters, senior, across the top of my exam. And to pass Spanish with him, you had to pass the final exam. And I'm sure I didn't pass that final exam. I was terrible. At any rate, I walked up the stairs, three sets of stairs to get to the top floor in this building. And at the end of a long hall, he hung the grades on the door. So I started walking down the hall. I was shaking all over because I knew if I didn't pass it, I wouldn't graduate, you know. And he gave me a D minus. It's the lowest passing grade, but I passed. So therefore, I graduated from college. So, but you asked me about the flying. Because of the Spanish, it actually dropped me back a year. I should have been in the class of 1958, but I was in the class of 1959. And that was the first year that ROTC offered a flight program. So had I graduated in 58, I wouldn't have been in flying. I don't know what, I'd probably be a psychologist or something right now, because that was my major. But because it was 59, I got into the flight program, and I really liked flying. And so when I got out of the service, I had to go in the Army and learn to fly, and that's the beginning of the whole story. So because I was a bad Spanish student, I learned to fly.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. So. But I was lucky in my life, you know. There were times when I, you know, almost got killed a couple of times, you know. Luckily, I just looked up, and the last time there was an airplane coming right at me. I pushed, dived down, and got under it. Another time we were flying in TWA from, it was a cargo flight from to Los Angeles. And as we came out of the clouds, the engineer sits on a seat between the two pilots, and I was looking out the window, and just as we were coming down on top of an airplane, and I just yelled, "Airplane," and they saw it, and we just barely missed him. A couple of times like that, but all the rest of the time was fun. I really enjoyed it.
So just the last thing, other than your time overseas in Korea and all the places that you went, well, just overall, what was like your experience like in the service and in the Army?
The Army was not bad. I enjoyed the Army. The Army wasn't bad. I mean, I have good friends that I made in the Army, and they've been my friends all my life. And it was good training. I mean, it was really good training, actually. The Army was good. Flying in Argentina was good. Flying in Kuwait was good. Nice people. Aviation has nice people. A lot of good, smart people in aviation. I'm not one of them, but there's a lot of really smart people there.
Well, I mean, if you can fly, you kind of got to be a little smart.
Yeah, I think you do, but I enjoyed it. I really, really did. And I still remember soloing that first time. Yeah, 7 hours, that's not very much time. And the guy got out, the instructor got out and said, "Well, the airplane's going to be a little bit lighter now with me not in here, and go ahead and take off." So, three times around, you know, three good landings. Yeah, that was fun. Piper Super Cub, that's what I learned to fly in. That's about it, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Great. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay. I did a lot of talking, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we need. So, thank you very much.
I hope I gave you enough information to.
I think it was good.
Okay. It's good. Great. Are you going to want to learn to fly someday, or?